We looked at ourselves through the lens of taqwa, through the lens of what does Allah want us to do, would we be seeing ourselves with such self-hatred? We need to revive our understanding of Islam. Malcolm X, you could say that, look, he was an Orthodox Muslim for not even a year. What does that say of us? So those of us who are born into the religion, those of us who revert and, you know, spend years or decades in the religion. If we are internalizing self-hatred, we need to revive our connection with Islam. That is something that, that is, if we take nothing else from Malcolm X's life, we should take that one thing, that a desire for justice, a desire for closeness to Allah, a desire to for the truth, that is the one thing that is worth being driven by. Otherwise, we're going to live sad, pathetic lives, achieving nothing.
Yeah, stand by your people, I think, is a strong message. Sheikh Hanif, let me bring you in on this again. Of course, some of the views which Malcolm had in his early career, he began to distance himself from or reject even towards the end of his life. Things like the white devil terminology. Do you think that it's fair to say that some of Malcolm X's opinions and views could be classed as racist towards the beginning of his career?
I would say yes, but I wouldn't put this, the racism on the same level as, let's say, white supremacist racism. And I think that racism that Elijah Muhammad had preached is very, very sort of natural, if one can call it this way. You know, if, for example, you know, every time you walk down the street, police beat you up or pull you over for no particular reason, whether that police person is black or white, it doesn't matter. After a while, you'll grow up with a kind of a distaste and dislike or even hate for police, you see. I think the reaction, the racist reaction of Elijah Muhammad was something like that, you know, and basically what it did, you know, despite its negativity, it did achieve a very, very important cultural shift from the black internalization of white supremacism to you know, a black affirmation of their superiority over white people. But in fact, it wasn't really supposed to be like that. You know, in fact, what it did was it overturned a racism against white supremacism by creating a supremacism of its own. It was a falsehood, but it did wake a lot of people up. And then in the process, you find that people started to find contradictions just in their lives, you know, just in terms of relating with other Muslims and so forth. They found contradictions in this, and they went towards the truth.
Thank you, Sheikh. And Ahmed, I'm going to come back to you before the show ends. We've only got a few minutes left, unfortunately. But just tell me, I mean, obviously there's a lot of questions surrounding his death. We don't quite know what's happened because there's a lot of conspiracies there. But tell me, what have we lost, and what do you make of how he ended? I mean, it's surely not coincidence that one of these great leaders of the community was ended in such an appalling and suspicious way.
Of course it is. What was taken from us was someone who is and was a role model. And I think that we should end on that point, because we see him as a role model. And then when you go through his autobiography, you can understand how we can be role models for future Malcolm X's. What I mean by that is, when you read his autobiography, you notice that he looks up to the strength of his mother and his father. So how does his autobiography open? It opens with a retelling of how his mum stood down a crowd of KKK members who'd come with torches in the middle of the night. She stood them down, and that must have been a formative memory for him. And again, he had a high opinion. He had his criticisms, but he had a high opinion of his father's attempts at also reviving pride in the black community. So what we need to see in ourselves is, yes, Malcolm X is a role model for us today, but how can we be the role model for the future Malcolm X's? We need to have the strength in ourselves as individuals, as parents, as community members, if we want to see another Malcolm X rise up. Because, you know, it's really tempting to sort of like mythologize him, to sort of compartmentalize him, to say that he was a man of that time, wasn't he great, and then just leave it at that, leave his autobiography and his lessons as a dusty book on the shelf. What we need to realize is that he was a role model. He had his role models. If you want to see his like again today, we need to be the role models and have that strength as well.
That's a fantastic point to end on. How can we keep Malcolm X's legacy going today? Thank you very much, Ahmed, and to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif as well for joining us in the studio today. But that's all the time we have for for this edition of the show, unfortunately. And thank you to everyone at home. Join us again next week for another edition of Eye on Islam. But for now, Assalamu alaikum.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and felicitations on the birth anniversary of the survivor of the tragedy of Karbala, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, the fourth infallible successor of Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Here is something to ponder upon from him. Fear God and know that you will inevitably return to Him when everyone will see His good and bad deeds right before His very eyes. He will wish for the longest period of time to separate Himself from His bad deeds.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program of Viewpoint, and I'm Beta, the host of today's episode. And we have two dear speaker guests here with me, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, in this episode of today, we're going to discuss one of the most controversial issues of Islamic world about Palestinian issue. So, as you know, Palestine is one of the most valuable lands and regions in Islam thoughts and also other religions. So, in this episode, based on the leadership statements, we're going to discuss this issue.
She's standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents.
Since the Nakba in 1948, the Palestinians have been in a vicious cycle of exile, expulsion, relocation.
This training gives us the skills and expertise to help us pursue a successful career in the future and helps us in the day-to-day life.
The youth are the same, but the circumstances around them have changed. The harsh realities faced by the youth nowadays makes life harder for them compared to previous generations. With the current limitation, the youth have a hard time achieving their aspirations and dreams.
To a lot of Palestinians, this is more unrealistic. It's more unrealistic because 7 million Palestinians will not simply give up their human rights to return back to their land. So for them, this is the solution. And Israel has, the 6 decades we've had, Israel has tried everything except what they think is the right solution, the right for the Palestinians, which is a solution based on international law, based on recognizing basic human rights, allowing Palestinians to return to their homes. This is the solution which Israel has not tested, which the international community has not tried, even though this is a solution which is enshrined under various agreements, various human rights treaties throughout the world. So for Palestinians, this is the only way that the real solution in Palestine will come about.
First of all, let's start with the history of this land and also the importance of this issue in Islamic world. Brother Ali, let's start with you.
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. The issue of Palestine is one of the key issues and one of the most important issues in the Islam world. And as the leader himself said, that it's one of the most urgent issues in the world of Islam.
Yeah.
And for everyone, it has to be clear that why it is the first and foremost issue and one of the most important issues in the Islam world. So if we are going to dissect the issue, we need to have a look at the history of formation of this forged and fake country. We believe that there was no country under the name of Israel, and still we do not recognize such a country because it was a land that was usurped by some. So some of the European countries and some of, let's say, Western countries, let's say, have tried to appoint a piece of land in the world which is one of the most strategic centers in the world as a center for the gathering, or let's say, for settlement of the Jews. So they selected this important part of the world, which is exactly and which was exactly inside the heart of the Islamic Ummah. You might be asking, why is this that important, and why is it one of the key issues of the Islam world? Why is it one of the basic and, let's say, principal issues of the Islamic Ummah? It has some factors that can be actually included as answers to this question.
Yeah.
First is that Palestine itself is a Muslim country, and it was usurped by another group of, let's say, people, a group of nations, let's say, and with the access of UK. So they tried to appoint a part of the world and actually make a theory about it and to call it, let's say, the land of the promised land, and make a, let's say, ideological background for this, and starting to transfer the Jews from different countries to this country. Second, it was one of the important Islamic centers because it was the first Qibla of the Muslims. So it is important for us because it is related to our Islamic beliefs. The Masjid al-Aqsa, which is one of the first Qibla of the Muslim, is located there. And except Masjid al-Aqsa, there are too many other masjids in this city, almost 30, 35 masjids, which were among the important masjids at that time, at the dawn of Islam. So it is, again, one of the Islamic centers that has been usurped. The third point that I can refer to is that there is a danger of improvement and progress of a fake country in the center and in the heart of the Islamic land. All of us are familiar with the Islamic territories before that issue and the kind of way that they tried to target the Ottoman Empire and how to paralyze it and the way that they paralyzed it. So that plant, let's say seed, which was not really in the right place to be planted. So we are witnessing, all of us, that all the Western powers are trying to support and back this center, this fake country, with mostly ideological purposes, and secondly with a sort of, let's say, humiliating the Islamic Ummah.
Yeah.
So it is important for us to focus and to back and defend the Palestinians as Muslims. And one important point which is necessary to be mentioned is that we as Muslims have duties based on Islamic mm-hmm. teachings. In Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put it on our shoulder that if we are hearing the voice of oppression of a Muslim, it's our duty to support him, to back him.
Yeah.
So I think this goes at the first factor that can be added to the others.
Thank you for your elaboration. So, we got to know, to hear, we understood that, this Palestinian issue is one of the most important things, and you elaborated some factors of this importance. But at the next level, if we refer to some of the leaders' statements, we got to know that it is too urgent to actually deal with and cope with this problem. I want you, Brother Muhammad, to tell me why is it a priority for us? I mean, there are other important things. There are another wars, like, I don't know, in the history of human beings, like World War II, that we had a lot of sacrifices in that war too. But why we are putting emphasis on this special issue, and we call it as something really urgent?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Referring back to the speeches of the lead of the Islamic leader Ayatollah Khamenei, he mentions a very important keyword in his statement about Palestine and Israel. He says that how Israel is a cancer, not only cancer in the Muslim world, but cancer in the entire region. If you see all the major conflicts that we're facing, to the most recent Daesh conflict that we had in Syria, even the Arab Spring, the uprising that we had recently, it was let down because of Israel itself. So, of course, considering how cancerous Israel and its political agenda is and how their ideology is based upon, it's important we combat this cancer before it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at the maps of the occupied lands before the occupation and until now, you'll see year by year, the lands of the Palestinian, the oppressed people, the houses are being bulldozed. The lands are slowly being usurped to the point that a small percentage of that land that they originally owned is now in their own hands. And majority of the land is now being occupied by this cancer. So if we do not attempt to combat this big cancer in the region, it's going to be too late in the future. And like our brother Ali mentioned, you have to see the reason why this entire country, so-called occupation, occurred. Why in the entire world, England could have given a small area of their own country. The mm-hmm. U.S. could have given their own, a bigger state for Israel. They could have given, so many lands exist in the world, but they had to plant this cancer in this specific region, the heart of the Islamic world.
Yeah.
So there was a specific reason why they did so. And this progression and this, so much of petrol dollars spent in this, so much of, the taxes taken from the people, from the, American people and people from around the world are being spent in trying to make this occupation even vast. It gives us a red alert that it is now the time, more than ever, to combat this cancer and to remove it altogether at once. So this is why we call this an urgent matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, really, for elaboration. And you mentioned this cancer and the amount of money that they are investing in these issues. So,
I want to add
some lawyer.
So let me add some other points to the explanations of respected brother Muhammad about the urgency of the issue of Palestine. And mm-hmm. it is that, I mean, for every human being, there are some issues that are of high importance and urgency. For example, the issues related to eating and the issues related to breathing. I mean, this is our life. I mean, mm-hmm. we need to survive and we need to have. But there are some other issues, again, that are very urgent for us, like our security. I mean, the security of me as a person. Mm-hmm. We as the people, we as the people who are living in West Asia. So we have an issue of security. In case there is no security, our life, again, would be in danger. So it is one of the foremost priorities of us. We believe that this country here has actually endangered our security. So security, like food, like any other, material that we need for our survival is important. This security actually is quite clear if you ask any Muslim in Islam land, not only in the West Asia. It endangers the security of all of the Islamic Ummah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are saying the consequences of this wicked existence on the scene of the earth. All the neighboring countries are in
trouble
and in turmoil due to the existence of this cancerous complex. So security is very important for us. That's why it's the most urgent issue of the slum world.
And even though we have instances of occupation, let's say the most recent one as being Kashmir, occupied by the Indian government, we have many other occupations like Bahrain, occupied by, the regime that is not necessarily backed by the people, or the more recent the revolution of Yemen. All these were matters that were of high priority, but none of them as the priority number one, as the priority of Palestine. Why? Because all of the chaos that we see around us, it's mainly because of Israel.
And thank you for your presence here, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us in this episode. It was all the time we had for today's episode. And we're going to discuss this issue more in other episodes. So I bid you farewell, and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow can go on free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Father, to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt. The Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow.
Iran's technological future.
Part 2. After the atomic bombing in the World War, the Radium Girls and similar incidents like the Chernobyl disaster in Ukraine in 1986 and the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster in 2011 after the 8.9 strong earthquake, the international community rose up against nuclear energy. But the question is, why do countries, even Japan that was subject to the biggest atomic curse, not give up nuclear energy? Why does a country like Iran make so much effort and spend so much money to achieve such an apparently dangerous energy? West Asia is known for its wars. The wars were initially waged under different excuses, but they usually pursue the same goal, and that is oil. The United States' latest direct war in the region was launched in 2003. The U.S. invaded Iraq under the pretext that the country possessed weapons of mass destruction, like biological and nuclear bombs, but after years of war and bloodshed, no weapons that were used as a pretext to invade the country were found. Even though no unconventional weapons were found in the country, it was rich in oil resources that was hugely extracted. After the invasion, oil was extracted and used to push U.S. policies and economy forward. The U.S. dealt with Iraq and raised accusations that are somehow similar to Israel's behavior vis-a-vis Iran.
That Iran has another secret facility in Tehran, a secret atomic warehouse for storing massive amounts of equipment and material from Iran's secret nuclear weapons program. We exposed the site of Iran's secret atomic archive. It's right here, in the Shorabad district of Tehran. Today, I'm revealing the site of a second facility, Iran's secret atomic warehouse. It's right here, in the Turkuzabad district of Tehran, just 3 miles away.
The Turkuzabad carpet washing center was Netanyahu's last trick for the media to get the international community on board his Iranophobia scheme for, quote, possessing nuclear weapons. But the Israeli regime did not stop there at the media campaign level. To date, it has assassinated top Iranian nuclear scientists. He's someone who doesn't want to realize that based on numerous inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, and the religious views of the Iranian leader, it is not after nuclear weapons.
As of today, I can state that Iran is implementing its nuclear-related commitments. We have had access to all the sites and locations which we needed to visit.
So why does Israel keep insisting on the accusation and pursue such confrontational policies with Iran to stop the country from reaching nuclear technology? Is it possible that the objections are just excuses? Just like what happened in Iraq? How can the energy benefit Iran that the Israeli regime does everything it can to stop it from reaching the technology? It was exactly 6 years after the first and last nuclear bomb blast that a national lab in Idaho was lit up by only 4 200-watt light bulbs. Even though the EBR-1 project's goal was not to generate electricity, it corroborated theories concerning producing electricity from nuclear energy. The system, which was more complicated than making an atomic bomb, was later named nuclear reactor. The reactors could easily provide electricity for a city or more without constructing huge dams or consuming thousands of tons of charcoal and emitting pollutant gases. 70 years after the 4 famous light bulbs in Idaho were lit up, a little further away,
Bill Gates, as the richest man on the planet and the owner of Microsoft, was investing on nuclear reactors that could work for 60 years after fueling just once. Today, reactors have considerably reduced consumption of oil condensates for producing energy. For example, the 1,000-megawatt reactor in Iran's Bushehr has saved 47 million barrels of oil that would otherwise be used for generating electricity in 7 years. In Europe, generating electricity is the foremost goal of using nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, but in Asia, there is a more burning issue, and that is water. West Asia is among the driest regions in the continent. It has only 1% of fresh water resources in the world. Many analysts believe that the next wars in the region will not be over oil. They say water is a serious concern in this part of the world. In this dry region, Israel has managed to export its agricultural products to all across the world, besides meeting 95% of its population's demands. The Israeli regime does not have underground water resources or many rivers. However, it has tipped environmental balance in its own favor by using nuclear technology to rein in nature. On the shores of the Red Sea, the saline water is desalinated for agriculture and drinking. As an example, Sorek, as the largest water treatment plant in the world, located 15 kilometers south of Tel Aviv, can purify 230 million cubic meters of water and tackle water shortage to a great extent. This amount of water is equal to the water Iran annually receives from the Karajan Latian dams for drinking and agriculture in Tehran and Alborz provinces, with a population of about 15 million people. Even though only 20% of the land occupied by the Israeli regime is arable, today it has become an agricultural hub.
This is the finished product, desalinated water. And according to the officials here at the plant, it's a more complete water than water that hasn't had the saline removed, because in the process of desalination, minerals are added back.
It seems the Israeli regime and Washington are seeking to stop Iran from accessing nuclear energy, not because they are worried it might make a nuclear bomb, but they are concerned that Iran might achieve the nuclear technology that can strengthen its independence and tackle millions of Iranians' needs. Water and energy are among the most vital necessities in agriculture and other industries, and even if a country like Iran does not need nuclear energy to fulfill its needs, it still cannot forego the energy. If the fruit produced by farmers goes bad before reaching the market, it will bring nothing but financial loss and physical exhaustion. Many kinds of fruit cannot resist against natural bacteria and fungus as they quickly go bad. Today, the key to reach the market, especially the international one, is in the hand of irradiation. Thanks to nuclear technology, radiation technology has been around for 60 years and is used in the agriculture industry. Exposing fruits to the light emission of radiation for a short time can destroy the larvae and bacteria in fruits and increase its shelf life. Today, many agricultural products and even fruits like strawberry that have very short shelf life are exported to other countries. Exposing fruits to the gamma ray at entry points and quarantine centers of a country can stop the spread of insects and pests.
We have to look at the taste, the color, the granulometry. Is there some foreign material? And also we look at the microbiology. Spices can be contaminated up to 1 million bacteria per gram. And with the irradiation, it can reduce by 99.9%. Other treatment will not offer that kind of reduction. Irradiation for us will not change the taste, the color, will not leave any residue, and also is really lowering the microbiological count.
When we piece together different problems like medical treatment, industrial experiments, and other issues a country can resolve by using the nuclear technology, we find out that there is a good reason behind Iran's political and economic battle to achieve the technology. Today, if a country wants to guarantee its economic, scientific, and technological future, it needs to step in this field.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
وَالَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیبه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Congratulations on the auspicious birthday anniversary of the fourth Shiite Imam, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, mainly known as Zainul Abidin. Today, Sunday, is the 5th of Shaban, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 7th of Isfan, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 26th of February, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Again, we would like to express our congratulations on the auspicious birthday anniversary of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam.
Kindness in our hearts, when all the fun starts, exhilaration. Smiles everywhere, delight in the air, jollification. Oh, trips, endlessful visits, colorful outfits, mark this occasion.
Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, an ardent worshipper. As his name suggests, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam was one of the most ardent worshippers of Allah after Prophet Muhammad. He used to pray thousands of rakas of salah in a matter of a day, which made him prostrate very much. Thus, he is called Sajjad, a person who does prostration or sajda a lot. His prayers and supplications recorded in a Saifa Sajadiya were sincere and straightforward, which made them even more touching and impressive. Through these prayers, he revealed the perfect manner of calling out to Allah and finding our way to Him in every breath and whatever difficulty we are dealing with. Also, he used his prayers to covertly show his opposition against the tyrants of his time and make people aware of the situation. Today, Shaban 5th, is the birthday anniversary of this outstanding man, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam. So again, we express our congratulations on this auspicious birthday anniversary.
So basically, in this supplication, the Imam alayhi salam says a statement here. Al-shiqa'i waladatni ummi. Did my mother give birth to me so I be wretched in my life and I fail? And she raised me all those years and spent all that time and effort so that in the end I fail my test? That's the idea that the Imam is communicating. The Imam is teaching you how to talk to Allah. The Imam alayhi salam is teaching you to say to Allah, "Oh Allah, after all these years that I am here right now, my mother gave birth to me, she raised me, I am working hard. Is it possible that after all this, I am going to be punished? I'm going to fail my test? Allah, your rahmah is greater than that." It's a symbolic, emotional way that the Imam is training you to see the rahmah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The Imam says, talk to Allah like this. When you talk to Allah like this, your heart softens and Allah forgives you. Is it possible that I was meant to be wretched? No, it's not. The answer is no. It's a rhetorical question. Su'al fardi, taqdiri. Oh Allah, is it your system that I am born with wretchedness and I'm doomed? No, Allah, I'm not doomed. You will save me. See, when you just say that to Allah, that softens your heart. The Imam is saying words that open the heart of Bani Adam. Because there are some people, I've seen them, when you try to talk them out of a bad habit, so they change their life, you know what they do? They said, Sayyid, I'm doomed. Many people have told me, Sayyid, Allah may read al-khair ili. Have you heard that? Have you heard that? I've heard it. Maybe people don't confide in you, but they usually come and tell us their problems. I've heard many people say, God doesn't want goodness for me. See, they have that loss of hope, that sense of despair. Allah doesn't want. God wants me to fail. One person once taught, Allah created me to fail. Yes, people have these thoughts in their mind. Imam Zain al-Abidin is teaching you how to expel those thoughts. He says, is it possible that my mom created me so I'm gave birth to me so I'm doomed? Oh Allah, ma'qula, is it possible, logical, that you created me so I would fail and you set me up for failure? Impossible. That's not the Lord that I know. See, you read that, your heart opens. If these people read these du'as and they know what this means, they will change their perspective. So the Imam is changing our psychology. And he's telling you basically, Allah did not create you for shaqa. Allah created you for rahmah, for forgiveness. Because the minute you believe you're doomed, you become a criminal. You know that? You know Ibn Muljam, la'natullahi alayhi. When the Imam asked him, why did you do that? Wasn't I a good Imam for you? Do you know what he answered? He didn't say, no, you were a bad Imam. You know what he said? أَفَأَنْتَ تُنْقِذُ مَنْ فِي النَّارِ. He told Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, are you going to save the one who's in hell? That means Ibn Muljam had already accepted that I am doomed, I am in hell, God hates me, so let me commit crimes. See? This is a poisonous belief that makes you a criminal, that keeps you away from Allah. Imam Zain al-Abidin is treating this problem. He's telling you, no, that's not the Lord that you worship. Allah never sets you up for failure. Allah never created you so you get punished. This is shaitan playing with your mind. And so he's emotionally saying it to us.
Children are wearing new clothes, bright colors fill the streets. Their faces full of laughter, their pockets full of sweets. Let us rejoice indeed, this is the day of Eid. Let us rejoice indeed, for this is the day of Eid.
Imam Masajjad's letter to his Shia and supporters. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the Ever-Merciful. May Allah guard you and us against the trickeries of the oppressors, the tyranny of the envious, and the violence of the despots. It surely exalts the mean and demeans the noble. It will drive some people into hell. This is an efficient lesson, trial, and warning for the heedful. Seek Allah's help and return to the obedience to Him, and those whose obedience should be preferred to those whom are currently followed and obeyed. Be thoroughly careful about you suffer regret and sorrow when you'll be taken to Allah to stand before Him for maintaining judgment. By Allah, I take the oath, any people who direct to the disobedience of Allah will surely suffer His agony, and any people who prefer the worldly pleasure to the life to come will surely suffer grievous and an ill fate. Do not receive anything from the pleasures of this world through committing an act of disobedience to Allah. Spend your times with performing acts of obedience to Allah. Seize the opportunities of this world and work for matters due to which you will be saved from the agony of Allah. This way will decrease your sins, make your apologies more excusable, and increase your opportunities of salvation. Today, Sha'ban 5th, is the birth anniversary of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. So again, from IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, we express our congratulations to you, dear listeners, dear Muslims all across the world. Notable books by Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. The legacy of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has preserved through the centuries by the books compiled by the Islamic scholars from his supplications and prayers. The two most well-known of these books are Sahifa Sajjadiyya and Risalatul Huquq, or Treatise of Rights. Sahifa Sajjadiyya is the collection of Imam Sajjad's supplication, which also reflects the social status at that time, especially in Medina. The supplications present his aversion to bad behaviors and speech of the people at that time, taking refuge to God from what he saw and heard and clarifying the right path under the guidance of religion and the Quran and purification of the souls from pollutions. This book has been translated into several languages. Now, Risalatul Huquq is the title of a lengthy narration from Imam Sajjad alayhi salam compiled as a book. This narration, which contains over 50 duties of any individual towards others, is in fact a treatise on moral conduct in both personal and social life. The rights discussed in these treaties address various social relations of any individual, like the duties towards parents, spouse, children, neighbors, teachers, students, believers, the leader of congregational prayer, the government, etc. Because of the particular position and the comprehensive content, several translations and commentaries have been written on these treaties.
Ali, Ali, ya Ali. Ali, Ali, ya Ali.
The fourth Imam's name is Ali. He is Ali ibn al-Husayn. Ali, the son of al-Husayn, salamullah alayhima. That's his name. What we know him as is either Zainul Abidin or As-Sajjad, the prostrator or the jewel, the beauty of Al-Abidin, the worshippers. In other words, he's the gem of the worshippers, the best of the worshippers, the one that stands out and outglows everyone else in the aspect of worship. And there's a reason for that.
Ya Zain al-Abidin, Ya Zain al-Abidin. Ali, Ali, Ya Ali, 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 Ya Ali.
Not only do we have a book of dua from him known as As-Sahifa As-Sajjadiyya that was written, apparently, according to what we have in history, by the Imam, and there were copies made that his different children had, and those du'as are very beautiful. But besides that, the time he spent in worship was very well known. The time he spent in prostration, which has caused him to be referred to as a sajjad, he would develop blisters, as it says, on his forehead.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Today's Special, which came to you on the birthday anniversary of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. Again, at the end of this program, we would like to express our congratulations on the auspicious birthday anniversary of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the best of the worshippers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on earth. May Allah bless you all. Fi amanillah.
La ilaha illa Allah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami,
علي إمامي علي إمامي
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.